It's Wednesday, January 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, North Korea says it has conducted a successful hydrogen bomb test.
We know North Korea has a propensity to resort to these things, major provocations.
We look at the mysterious disappearances of five Hong Kong booksellers, and we hear Justin Bieber's latest hit single. It's all ahead. North Korea said Wednesday it conducted a successful hydrogen bomb test in a move that brought strong criticism from world powers. A newsreader made the announcement on North Korean state television. She said the Republic, as a responsible nuclear weapon holder, will neither use nuclear weapons first nor transfer nuclear-related means and technology under any circumstances as already declared unless aggressive hostile forces infringe upon our autonomy. There can neither be suspension of nuclear development nor nuclear dismantlement unless the U.S. rolls back its vicious hostile policy toward North Korea. Pyongyang's claim of another successful nuclear detonation, its first hydrogen test, has drawn international condemnation, including from China. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said it firmly opposes such a test, will lodge a protest, and did not know in advance it was coming. Britain says it has joined China in calling for a resumption of six-party talks aimed at the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. The White House has promised to study the nature of the apparent test and respond appropriately. The UN Security Council, which has a series of sanctions on the North over its previous atomic and missile tests, set an emergency meeting for Wednesday morning to discuss its reaction. The seismic strength of the test was initially set at 5.1 magnitude on the Richter scale, but further testing to determine the exact strength could take weeks. RAND Corporation nuclear analyst Bruce Bennett tells International Edition's Victor Beatty he's doubtful it was a hydrogen bomb blast as claimed by the North.
Their third nuclear test, which most people think was in the range of about 6 to 10 kilotons or smaller than the Hiroshima blast, was a 4.9 on the Richter scale. This one is reported as a 5.1. That number might get adjusted, but given the scale is logarithmic, that means this one was about 1.5 times as powerful as the last one. So it takes it barely up to the level of the Hiroshima blast, roughly speaking. That's not too impressive for a fourth nuclear test. Most countries who get to a fourth test do considerably better than that. And if this is a hydrogen bomb, should have been somewhere between 10 and 100 times as big.
So they're hyping it, in your view?
They're clearly hyping it. Now, one possibility is that it could be what is called a boosted weapon. In a boosted weapon, which is an early generation of working with fusion, the hydrogen bomb material, you only add a little bit of fusion material to the bomb, and it makes it more efficient. And so they could have been trying to do that, but even if they were trying to do that, they should have been at least 5 to 10 times bigger than their last test, and they're not. So either their fusion element failed or their fission element acted really poorly, like back along the lines of the first or second test, for them to come out in the kind of size range we're hearing, unless that gets adjusted.
That's Bruce Bennett of the RAND Corporation. He says he's concerned that if the detonation proved to be disappointing to the North Korean leadership, they could attempt more such tests leading up to the Seventh Party Congress scheduled in May. Bennett says a bigger underground blast could result in radiation leakage that, with the direction of the wind, could spread toward China and Japan. Sung-yun Lee, a Korea expert at Tufts University, says the latest test is no surprise and is the newest effort to squeeze more concessions out of the global community.
We know North Korea has a propensity to resort to these things, major provocations. In the first half of the calendar year, raising the stakes, then in the second half of the calendar year, launching sort of a P-2 peace offensive with a view toward reaping concessions just for de-escalation and creating the illusion of crisis averted. And North Korea has been very good at playing this game over the past 25 years. It's reaped, by my calculation, at least $20 billion from China, South Korea, and the United States. This is a particularly opportune time because North Korea likely calculates that this decades-old cycle of provocations, negotiations, extorting concessions that has brought it billions of dollars will work once again against democratically elected leaders who come and go with each election cycle, especially those nearing the end of their term.
What will South Korea's response likely be?
Usually there's a lot of rhetorical condemnation. This is unacceptable. This is an unacceptable provocation. This is provocative. There will be penalties. There will be some action at the UN Security Council. So far, there have been 5 or 6 strongly worded UN Security Council resolutions with a view toward penalizing North Korea for its provocations, long-range missile tests, and nuclear tests. Those are effective. Those are helpful. But they have not deterred North Korea's march toward nuclear breakout. Because while China signs on to those UN Security Council sanctions, China behind the scenes has gradually increased its aid to North Korea.
That's Sun Yung Lee of Tufts University. He says he's bewildered that targeted financial sanctions, which have proven to be effective to change North Korean behavior in the past, have not yet been reimposed by the United States. And Troy Stangerone of the Korea Economic Institute says he will be interested to see how China acts going forward. He says Beijing has potential leverage since much of North Korea's economic lifeline runs through China. Well, the test prompted emergency national security meetings in South Korea and Japan, where leaders of both nations denounced Pyongyang's actions. This is South Korean President Park Geun-hye. She said, so now our government has to take decisive measures against any additional provocations by North Korea and work with the international community to make sure the isolated country pays the price for its latest nuclear test. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe also commented. He said North Korea's nuclear test this time is a major threat to our nation's safety. This absolutely cannot be tolerated, and we strongly condemn this act. Well, the North Korean announcement on state television came less than a month after North Korean leader Kim Jong-un claimed his country had developed a hydrogen bomb. The United States and others quickly discounted that claim. And now for reaction on social media, I'm joined by International Edition's Olin Akisholu.
Hi, Sarah. Well, there's a lot of people talking about North Korea's nuclear test on Twitter. It's been a trending topic long enough that it became its own moment this morning. And reactions are varied. Some people say they're worried North Korea is now a bigger security threat for the U.S. and the rest of the world. Many people are hesitant to take the news seriously and are saying North Korea has tried to fool the world before. But the U.S. Geological Survey made a Facebook post that proves there was a magnitude 5.1 earthquake in North Korea. And the post has a link to an interactive map on their website. And if you click on it, you can look at nearby cities and the precise location of the epicenter. And it does report the depth as 0 kilometers.
Well, Olin, in the past, social media users liked to joke about North Korea. Are people still making light of this?
Yes, and even though a lot of people are taking news of a possible hydrogen bomb test seriously, Twitter users started joking about North Korea and Kim Jong-un right away. One of the funnier tweets I read was a response to AFP sharing that North Korea was about to make a special announcement last night. Yusuf Munayer, who's an executive director of an activist group, he responded to that tweet saying, here's hoping Kim Jong-un is pregnant. Obviously, you know, he's trying to be funny, and a lot of people are still tweeting out jokes. But, of course, when the jokes start flying, sometimes it can be hard to pick out sarcasm. And thankfully, our correspondent, Steve Herman, tweeted out a helpful reminder today about the Twitter account DPRK News Service. It looks like a real news source, and even though it has 40,000 followers and calls itself the official news source of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. It is a parody account. So take any news you get from that source with a grain of salt.
Absolutely. Thanks very much, Olin. That's International Edition's Olin Akosholu. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
It's been long known that evolution has guided human development to adapt to changing environments over the years. Now, new findings by U.S. and French researchers suggest that our language abilities have also adapted to our local environment. The researchers examined languages spoken throughout today's world and compared their sound structures with climatic and ecological factors. Ian Madison from the University of New Mexico says that he and his colleagues found that the number of distinct consonants in a language and how they are grouped together are related to the precipitation, temperature, tree cover, and elevation of an area in which the language evolved. The researchers say their findings support a theory which suggests animal species adjust the sounds they make so that they can be transmitted more efficiently in the environment they live in. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear singer Justin Bieber's latest hit. In Hong Kong, there's concern about five booksellers who have mysteriously disappeared. The five men are linked to the Causeway Bay Bookshop and have vanished in recent months in southern China, Thailand, and last week in Hong Kong itself. The most recent person to go missing is 65-year-old Li Bo, who is a dual Chinese and British citizen. The bookshop is known to sell sometimes scandalous publications about China's Communist Party leadership. I spoke with Patrick Poon, a China researcher for Amnesty International in Hong Kong. I asked him about the circumstances surrounding Li's disappearance.
And there were a lot of information going around, like whether he was taken back to mainland China, although there's still no confirmed information whether he is being detained or whatsoever, but it's confirmed kind of like he's now in China, because according to what the alleged letter he sent to his office in Hong Kong, and his wife also disclosed that letter to the public. And it looks like he's now being held in China, and then and also why? Because he also said in the letter that he is assisting an investigation. So the whole thing, you know, can say very clearly now that he's now being held in mainland China. But for what reason, that we have no idea. And there are rumors about whether this is a new book they're going to publish about Xi Jinping and his lovers. And there's no way to confirm whether it's true or not. But what we can see is there's a really serious concern whether he's now being forced to disappear in mainland China. Because what we see is so far is only the Hong Kong government leaders. They say they're investigating the case because the wife originally also reported to the police, although she now withdrew the case. But the problem is that we haven't heard of any official comment from the Chinese government. You know, there's no confirmed information from them, and it doesn't seem to be the Chinese government want to admit any responsibility for holding this person. And if only the party mouthpiece Global Times been talking about his case, and also the bookstore been like selling the books, discrediting the bookstore, publishing those books of affecting, you know, infringing the mainland leaders, mainland government leaders' credibility. But then, like, there's no further information whatsoever about these five people. And it's very worrying. This person, you know, just reported 2 days ago, but still, earlier, the other four of them, one was Gui Minghai. He disappeared in Thailand, and it's very mysterious what happened to him. And then the other two that also got information, also saw the news that they were detained in Shenzhen. And then, but since then, there's no further information about these people. And it's very worrying whether, you know, it would set a very bad situation here in Hong Kong about whether freedom of press, freedom of publication, and freedom of expression would be affected.
Isn't, you know, Hong Kong known for publishing books that have been banned in the mainland?
Yes, those books are quite popular. I mean, like, especially for, like, for the mainland tourists, they travel to Hong Kong. Many of them would buy those books, those banned books, and actually those books ranging from, you know, rumors about mainland officials, leaders, or about their biography, or some of like unknown personal stories of those mainland leaders, which are actually banned on the mainland, because if they want to publish those books, Hong Kong seems to be the only place on Chinese soil which can sell those books.
Well, the idea, though, that people who, you know, people in Hong Kong can somehow be disappeared, say, by authorities, by people working on behalf of the mainland. I mean, this is what the kind of allegations or the speculation is going. That must be very troubling, though, I would think, even for the Hong Kong government.
I mean, like, so far what the Hong Kong government, especially the chief executive said so far, just repeating what is enshrined in the Hong Kong Basic Law, which ensure Hong Kong citizens have rights to freedom of expression, freedom of publication.
That's Patrick Poon, China researcher for Amnesty International in Hong Kong. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Justin Bieber is back in the spotlight. In recent years, that statement usually meant he was connected with some sort of controversy. Today, as we hear from VOA Border Crossings host Larry London and International Edition host Susan Yaki, this time it's about his music.
'Cause if you like the way you look that much, oh baby, you should go and love yourself.
Love Yourself. It's from his new album, which, by the way, happens to be Justin's fifth album to sell over a million copies. So, yes, Susan, you're right. He's had a lot of problems in the last couple of years. And he says himself, you know, he learned from his mistakes. He's turned the corner. He's 21 now. Let's face it, when he first got fame, he was just a teenager and wasn't ready to be making $40 million, $50 million a year and having all the attention he was getting at the time. So, you know, he says he's grown up, he's learned from his mistakes, the year is still young, but we hope that all of this is true. He's going out on tour for his new album in the United States. It's a world tour, but it starts in the U.S. in March, promoting his new album Purpose, which he said finally has given his music purpose.
Well, let me ask you about this. Has he lost some of his fan base as a result of not being as bizarre as he was before? Or
absolutely,
his good looks and his good voice and his good dancing are carrying him on.
Exactly. Not only has he managed to sustain the fan base he developed as a teen, he's now attracting their moms and the older generation who are attracted by the very things you just mentioned, his abs and his good looks and all. You know, he's a blonde-haired, blue-eyed young boy, grew up in Canada, on very, very meager income. His mom was the one who raised him in Canada as a single parent, didn't have any money come in. They were on food stamps for a while. He got discovered on YouTube with his videos and music, and he, you know, he's just lit it up ever since, and he's going out on tour. The new song, by the way, which is the third from his Purpose album, is already the first number one song in the UK.
Wow.
not the first ever, obviously, but the first one for 2016.
Well, tell me about Love Yourself.
Love Yourself. Now, that's an interesting song. He says the whole album was inspired by his relationship with Selena Gomez. He's admitted that. The two of them are no longer together. In fact, he's been on vacation with his new girlfriend, 19-year-old Haley Baldwin, the daughter of actor Stephen Baldwin. And so he made it known to the world that the two of them are in a relationship because he just put on Instagram a photo of the two of them kissing. But the album, he says, was inspired by the love he still holds for Selena Gomez. And it's a beautiful ballad.
Okay, well, let's hear it right now. Thank you very much, Larry London of Border Crossings, for stopping by.
Oh, thank you, Susan, for having me.
And if you think that I'm still holding on to something, you should go and love yourself. When you told me that you hated my friends, the only problem was with you and not them. And every time you told me my opinion was wrong, try to make me forget where I came from. And I didn't want to write a song, cause I didn't want anyone thinking I still care or don't. But you still hit my phone up.
That's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, is awarding more than $8.4 million in grants and cooperative agreements this year to support conservation projects and scientific studies that benefit coral reef management across seven U.S. states and territories, the Caribbean and Micronesia. All of these projects focus on priority coral reef regions and watersheds, addressing three primary threats: global climate change, land-based sources of pollution, and unsustainable fishing practices. Funded projects include grants to reduce sediment and improve water quality in U.S. Virgin Islands, work with communities in Hawaii to address threats to coral reefs, support coral reef ecosystem conservation in Puerto Rico, and strengthen outreach and education efforts. Projects also include work to assess coral reef resiliency to climate change in multiple locations. Earlier this year, NOAA declared the third global coral bleaching event. While corals can recover from mild bleaching, severe or long-term bleaching is often lethal, especially when combined with other threats. Healthy coral reefs are important to all of us. Conservation of these resources is a key factor in the resilience of coastal communities, said Jennifer Koss, director of the NOAA Coral Reef Conservation Program. The projects funded through NOAA's grants program allow us to strengthen our ties with local partners, address the most pressing threats to corals, and broaden our conservation efforts. Nearly half of the funds awarded this year directly support coral reef conservation projects led by state and territorial resource management agencies. Other conservation projects are led by non-governmental organizations, community groups, and academic partners. A limited number of international projects focused in Micronesia, Mesoamerica, and the wider Caribbean region were also supported. It's exciting to fund smart and innovative projects led by partners who are working across disciplines to make a positive impact on the condition of the world's coral reefs, said Jenny Waddell, coordinator of the NOAA Coral Reef Conservation Program's grants portfolio. There are surely a lot of challenges ahead for coral reefs, but by studying, managing, and conserving them in a collaborative way, we are all helping to ensure coral reefs continue to survive and thrive.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.